morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. May it please the Court. My name is Rob Hanauer. I'm here on behalf of Jeff Poggle, the appellant in this case. Yeah. From a practitioner's perspective, I'm fairly scared that a written decision from this court affirming the decision of the district court could provide a blueprint for how to circumvent an employee's rights under the FMLA. Now I'll explain why. Between July of 2006 and September of 2006, my client Jeff Poggle had experienced chest pains. He had received he went to doctor's visits. He had an angioplasty performed. He went in for VQ, CT, and PET scans. And on September 18th, he was in there for a PET scan of a mass found in his lung when he was going through these tests for his chest pains. And when he was in the doctor's office in Davenport, Iowa, he received a phone call from his boss, Scott Kramer, an employee at Tin Inc., the appellee in this case. And his boss told him that he wanted him to schedule some sales calls for the following day in Champaign, Illinois. Now, my client, Jeff Poggle's sales territory for his company was Central Illinois and Western Indiana. And there was no indication that he was going to be in Champaign the day after he was receiving this medical treatment, let alone having scheduled sales calls.
Champaign was normally part of his territory, but
yes, it is. It is correct. But he had not scheduled any sales calls, and he had not. There's no record evidence indicating that he had planned to be in Champaign.
Didn't he testify that he usually would plan his sales calls about a week ahead of time?
That is correct. He takes time to plan sales calls, schedule them, and he said okay, and he went the next day, the day after he was receiving treatment, for these sales calls. And not surprisingly, the sales calls were described by Kramer as disastrous in a termination memo that was sent 2 weeks later. Now, we're arguing on appeal that while the series of sales calls were bad, or arguably bad based on Kramer's claims that they are, the real problem was the September 18th Davenport day, the day in which he was receiving treatment, and he was called and told to schedule some sales calls for the following day.
Well, his employer didn't know he had any. He was in there to be diagnosed with his lump in his chest, did he?
I believe that there's, on the record, I guess.
The problem with your case is I don't know what it has to do with the FMLA.
I think that
if the employer may not have a very nice employer, but that's another issue, I think.
Well, I think that the record, the appendix, page 52, demonstrates that Sally Poggle, which is Jeff's wife, who was attending all these doctor's appointments with him and was concerned about his situation because her husband had heart troubles, knew exactly what was going on and was listening to all of his conversations when he was on the phone calling his boss saying, you know, I'm going to be in the doctor's office, you know, I'm going to the hospital for medical treatment. And she had said that he had told his boss that he was going to be in the hospital for a PET scan a few weeks before that. Moreover, I realize that the argument has been made
that PET scan had nothing to do with his heart, did it?
I believe that the argument has been made, and I understand your point, Your Honor. The stance that we have taken is that it was all sort of the same circumstances. He was complaining about chest pains. He did have an angioplasty performed, but when after the angioplasty, he came back to the hospital presenting with pleuritic chest pain. When they were doing tests to see what could possibly be causing these chest pains, the CT scan showed a mass on his lung. So he was going to go and have that checked out. Now, he would have had that checked out right then and there, but the problem is he was on blood thinners from when he had the angioplasty and the stenting done, which was part of the condition that he was suffering from. So they had to schedule it out because a PET scan is a nuclear test, I believe the record says, and you can't have a PET scan when you have blood thinners in your system.
Mr. Honauer,
yes.
Let me turn your attention to the termination letter itself.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which offers a number of different reasons. We know that an employer, I mean, the FMLA doesn't give somebody extra rights. It doesn't give you a right to perform poorly. It gives you a right to be gone, which can impact quantity, quotas, and expectations. Which of these specific items do you think were affected by your client's exercise of rights under the FMLA, at least retrospectively?
Let's see here.
It's appendix 45. Tons lost, no new accounts, no new targets, missed daily call reports on 9 specific days, and then there were the September 19 sales calls.
Your Honor, I would submit to the court that most everything was to some extent, maybe minimal, maybe major, affected by
Could
this.
Could you be specific here?
Yes. Up to 6 of the missed daily call reports, we argued in our brief that based on days that he was in the hospital or days that he was resting, which was the doctor deemed medically necessary.
Although the employer didn't have any notice of that, did it? That he was resting?
I'm not sure if the record reflects that, Your Honor. My apologies for not knowing. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, okay, how about tons lost? Presumably that's going to be the greatest concern to the employer.
I believe that the tons lost, when I believe we cited the Wojan case and the Allison case in our brief, they're district court cases from another district, for the proposition that when you're a salesperson, your sales quotas and your sales goals, like tons and things like that, should be altered to reflect your diminished capacity based on FMLA leave.
Based on absence.
Or absence, correct.
Okay. Being slowed down and on the job, the FMLA doesn't protect you.
I do not believe that we've briefed that, Your Honor. And I don't believe that it protects somebody who says that they can go full on and do their job.
Okay. Tons lost increased from 888 to 1261. Do you know what time periods that refers to?
I do not necessarily know which time periods it refers to. I do know that the argument was made in Appley's brief that there was a loss of tonnage in 2006. Nothing in the record that I know of indicates loss of tonnage in 2004 or 5 or any year prior to that.
I mean, the problem you've got, if you've got just declining performance by somebody who's still on the job, the FMLA doesn't really address or protect you on that. It addresses absence. And how could a jury on this record find that the tons lost was affected by absence as opposed to just declining performance?
I actually would submit that the jury might be able to find that there are two sets of statistics based on sales, like Jeff Poggle's paycheck. He testified that he was making the same amount no matter what. I mean, he was making $180,000 and his pay had been stable or steady, and he works on commissions. So he argued that in his deposition, he said that if the statistics were as stated in his termination memo or his performance memo, then his paychecks would have been reduced by possibly up to 20%. So I think that while there may be lost tonnage, he didn't have any lost pay.
When it says tonnage, are they selling the same type of metal?
It's container board, Your Honor. But I believe it's the way it was explained, and it's somewhat hazy. There's tiers of the different product. But
we can sell more expensive ones during one period and less expensive still making.
I think that that was the argument made from the other side. I just know that his paychecks were not diminished to the extent that they would have been had the numbers been as appellees have indicated.
More expensive, your tonnage could go down.
I believe that that would make that would be a possibility, Your Honor. But aside from that,
did you offer any other evidence challenging these tonnage figures?
Not that I know of, other than the fact that his paycheck did not go down.
He just said I was still making the same money. That's all.
That is correct.
I don't suppose he would know how much he was selling.
I was a salesman before I was a lawyer, and they're a somewhat different breed in that they don't pay attention necessarily so long as the paychecks and the commissions are coming in. At this point, I guess our stance has been articulated that, you know, the day before the series of sales calls, which is the only reason that the district court articulated for as a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for Jeff's termination, was a pretext. We're arguing that that was a setup for his termination. He was mousetrapped.
You're not abandoning your retaliation.
No, Your Honor, we filed an FMLA retaliation claim and an FMLA interference claim. And in both of those, in the interference claim, the district court said that we could establish a prima facie case. But because of the series of sales calls, that provided a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for his termination, because there's no evidence that on September 19th, the day after he was told to schedule the sales calls, the day of the sales calls, that he was on FMLA qualifying leave or anything like that. And with regard to the retaliation claim, the district court said that assuming without deciding that we can establish meet the low hurdle, prima facie hurdle, then for the same reason that the series of sales calls was not on par with what Kramer had intended or expected, then they had a legitimate non-discriminatory reason. That was the only reason that the district court hung its hat on us not being able to establish our case. And the thing is, we understand that we've still got a tough road to plow. The real question is whether we can find that a reasonable jury would conclude that, you know, calling someone who's arguably on FMLA leave on a day before they're supposed to go on sales calls and tell them to schedule some sales calls in Champaign when they're in Davenport is a setup. And if that's the only reason the district court relied upon, then we feel that it's enough to get to the jury. Now, we may not win before the jury, but we believe that we've satisfied the burden of creating a triable issue of fact.
Thank you, Mr. Hannah.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Grove, I gave your opponent about three more minutes, so I'll give you additional time, too.
Your Honor. May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Chris DeGroff, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Tin, Inc. Based on the briefs and what we just heard today, Mr. Poggle appeals just one issue. Was his poor performance on that September 19, 2006 ride-along a good enough reason to fire Mr. Poggle? And the answer is yes. Mr. Poggle admits that his performance was substandard that day, however you want to characterize it. It's an unrebutted, legitimate reason for terminating him, and summary judgment should be affirmed. I think it's important to note, though, that it was not just the ride-along that cost him his job. Your Honors were correct to point out that there were other issues going on with Mr. Poggle. His sales numbers were down. That is something that he admits.
Well, when you say that, the evidence of the ride-along is the fact that his performance decline is uncontested. That's certainly correct. But the question is, for that, is it, how is that connected with his benefits under the FMLA? That's what you got to, what he's got to show, and that strikes me as the part of the puzzle that we don't have much connection with.
I completely agree. This case really does come down to causation, and there is none. There's no fact that is connecting up Scott Kramer's decision to terminate Mr. Poggle and his exercise of any FMLA right.
So let's talk about the setup theory.
Sure.
Plaintiff testifies it's customary for him to schedule his sales calls a week in advance. Kramer calls him on the 18th, says, I'll meet you in Champaign. We're going on ride-alongs together. That seems like a clear recipe for failure.
Where in the record, though, I would ask appellant, do we find that Mr. Kramer set Mr. Poggle up in terms of giving him too short a notice? There's nothing in the record that...
Why isn't that a reasonable inference from a demand that you set things up, that sales calls be set up on such short notice?
In this situation, it could be that Mr. Kramer wanted to do a spot check on the calls that he had for the next day.
I thought the evidence was that it was Kramer who decided that Champaign was where the calls were going to be.
Correct.
Right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So, but the fact that Mr. Poggle sets up his calls 7 days in advance, remember, in the record, Mr. Poggle admits that Mr. Kramer does these exact same ride-alongs for all of his sales.
We know he does ride-alongs, but does Kramer do that where he decides where and only one day before?
There's no, well, the answer is yes, but there's
nothing. It's a very unusual way to do business, isn't it?
Perhaps, but even if it was completely arbitrary, even if it was completely unfair, this court has held many times that that is not a reason to cause for pretext.
Did Kramer testify that that's how he usually does things?
Was never asked the question.
A day's notice?
Never asked the question. What the question was asked of Mr. Poggle, do you have any evidence that he singled you out? The answer was exactly the opposite. No, I was not singled out. Mr. Poggle was given the same opportunities. Mr. Kramer did the exact same sort of ride-alongs with the other sales associates. There's no record.
Let me get back. He said he wasn't singled out for the ride-alongs. Did he expand and said, no, I was given, everything else was the same too?
He was never asked the question by plaintiff's counsel.
I mean, that seems like just a recipe for disaster for anybody. Next day, I'll tell you where you're going to go. You set up the calls on such short notice. That's the way Kramer does business?
I would submit to the court that, and you're doing exactly what appellant would like for this court to do, which is take judicial notice of what is standard for an industry when there's nothing in the record that would suggest that.
Now, we're talking about summary judgment and what inferences are reasonable.
Correct.
For a jury to draw.
And I would agree with you. If there was record evidence, for example, that Mr. Kramer allowed other sales associates a week, 2 days, 4 days notice, or graded them on a more lenient standard than he did for Mr. Poggle, I would agree we would have a problem on summary judgment.
There's no problem with saying, wherever you're going tomorrow, I'm going too, right?
Correct.
But you're going to go here tomorrow and I'm going with you. This is a disaster waiting to happen.
Perhaps for Mr. Poggle it was. But I will respectfully disagree that it somehow signals pretext on Mr. Kramer's part. And, again, I would point out that the ride-alongs were not the only issue.
They are the issue that the district court based its decision upon.
Correct.
Correct. Okay.
That's correct. So I guess the ultimate question here is whether there is any evidence in the record that Mr. Poggle was somehow set up, was somehow singled out. By the way, I think it's important to note the PET scan and that issue that he supposedly received this call while he was at the doctor's office. That's nowhere in the record. What we don't have in the record is when that PET scan actually occurred. Was it in the morning? Was it in the evening? Did it somehow impact Mr. Poggle's ability to set up calls for the next day? None of that is
in
the record.
Well, another issue, I think, is the ailment that the PET scan was designed to discover connected with the heart condition? Was that one condition or was it two different conditions?
It's two different conditions.
Are they legally separable?
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. You
well,
heard it today.
Your opponent says I understood him to say they weren't separable. So I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
There's no record evidence connecting the two. In fact, appellant would have you take the position that somehow getting your lung taken a look at is automatically aggregated with the July heart issues. And there's nothing, again, nothing in the record suggesting the two were connected. In fact, the lung condition turned out to be benign and there was no issue there. So,
not just chest pain.
I'm sorry?
The patient worries about symptoms, right?
Sure.
Chest pain.
Right.
Chest pain. This is chest. Heart.
Isn't
lungs
chest
are
pain
in the chest.
What links them all together?
No, I wouldn't agree that it should be aggregated. I don't think the FMLA looks at the definition of a serious health condition as a subjective belief by the patient that somehow they are connected. I think that the FMLA looks at it as, is this a serious condition requiring inpatient care? The lung condition did not require inpatient care. Did it require continued treatment? There's no evidence in the record that it did that. Therefore, it is not a serious health condition under the FMLA. And the fact that appellant would like to loop in other treatments for other conditions, be they in the same part of the body, I don't think that that is appropriate under the FMLA.
Well, did they know enough about it before they gave him the test to say that it was a separable condition, or was it possible that they weren't?
Well, it's true. I guess I'll take an extreme example. Let's say the doctor was looking at my chest for a heart condition and noticed that there was a mole on my shoulder. Granted, same part of the body, came out of the same observation. I go and check out the mole, and the mole turns out to be benign. How is that connected up? How do they connect up? And I would submit to you that they don't, and that's not the way they FMLA.
In the same part of the body.
This is true. I don't know.
Tests whether it's connected with some other pain, do you?
As liberal as the FMLA regulations are, I don't think that they take that broad of a view of this, however. So either under an interference theory or a retaliation theory, and I would submit that appellant has conflated the two somewhat, there still is no causation. And if you look at that termination letter, as you did when speaking with appellant, yes, there were a couple of mistakes that Mr. Kramer made, but in the end, that ride-along was fatal to Mr. Pagel's employment. And summary judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.